over at bangthebook.com. Lots of great stuff going on, as you know already. Parker Michaels will have an afternoon NHL report for us with his picks for today's action. Kyle Hunter with his college basketball picks. We'll get that daily article here today as well. I've got previews up for both the AFC and NFC championship games, as well as my opening line report, situational betting articles across the NBA, NHL, and college basketball, and a whole bunch more coming your way throughout the rest of the week. So keep it tuned to bangthebook.com. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff on our Bang the Book YouTube page as well, including 4 videos a week now from Brian Blessing and 5 or 6 days a week from me. So good stuff going on over there as well. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB200 is the promo code that will get you a 100% deposit match bonus up to $500 for both the sportsbook and the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. 2 guests on the program here with me today. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. How you doing, pal?
Doing very well. Appreciate your time as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining me here. And let's go ahead and dive right in with the NFC Championship game, Rams-Saints, the early game here on Sunday. So 12 o'clock body clock kickoff for the Rams, 2 o'clock in New Orleans, of course, local time. Saints, 3.5-point favorite, total on the game, 57. What do you think so far here, Brian?
Right out of the gate, first opinion would be I like the under. Knock on wood, had the under in the Rams-Eagles game, the Saints-Eagles game. And I think the Saints offense, albeit still very good, I think they peaked about 2/3 of the way through the season. You watched that game last week. By the way, the Rams had to be sitting there watching that game going, are you kidding? That ball goes through Jeffrey's hands or they'd be at home. But the Eagles defense, at this time of year, Adam, I mean, you got to really kind of go outside the box a little bit. And we know that both of these games are rematches and the track meets, and that's what we saw the last time. Well, I think you could draw the same correlation with the Rams that maybe what was going on with the Eagles. And that was Philly's defense finally got healthy, and Schwartz was able to dial something up to, you know, keep that game tight and give the Eagles a chance. All year long, the Rams high-scoring games. But don't sleep at all on Wade Phillips as a defensive coordinator. And I think, clearly, I think the advantage the guys like that get is, you know, when they get torched for a lot of things that frustrated them in the first matchup, believe me, they're going to clean that up and shore that up. So, you know, the rematch aspect of it, you know, lends me to think that to go under the total. And the one other thing would be the way that game was played the first one, Michael Thomas had ridiculous numbers. Breeze hit 4 touchdowns. New Orleans jumped all over these guys. It was 35-17 at the half. So then the Rams come roaring back and they tied the game. I'm going to do a props video later in the week. And I think we'll touch on this a little bit. But the way that first game was played, once the Rams fell hopelessly behind, it almost rendered maybe their biggest weapon move. And in that game, Gurley only had 68 yards rushing. Yeah, it was fun. But if you want to win and go to the big game here, I think the Rams got to come out of the gate. They got to establish Gurley a lot more in early in this game. And I think that's the correlation for the Rams winning this game. You know, if Gurley gets 130 yards rushing, I think the Rams could walk out of here with a win.
Well, and a lot's been made here so far of the fact that the 4 teams left standing are the highest scoring offenses that we had in the NFL during the regular season. But I think there's some conservatism to this game because, you know, Jared Goff completely went off in the regular season matchup between these two, in part because they were playing catch up in the second half. But I don't expect this game to be in Jared Goff's hands at all whatsoever. This will be Todd Gurley. This will be C.J. Anderson. And when you watch that Saints game, I mean, Drew Brees was really good after that first arm punt on the first drive, but there wasn't a whole lot of downfield stuff there. You know, the Saints move very methodically, and they're always moving forward, which is why they had a good offense during the regular season. They don't get a lot of negative plays. Brees doesn't get sacked. know, they've got two running backs that, you know, kind of have a little bit of a thunder and lightning element to them. They don't have negative plays. They're always moving forward. But as we saw in that game against the Eagles, that also takes time. So I think the under is definitely the way to look here, because I don't think that, you know, Sean McVay can take the chance of saying, you know what, I need Jared Goff a lot here. In his first playoff road start in a very raucous environment, they're going to ground and pound, and that's going to take time off the clock.
That and, you know, the last thing we saw, and you don't want to overreact, but it was pretty apparent in the second half of that game that Peyton made the adjustment at halftime that they were not getting the ball in Kamara's hands enough, you know, looking for everything to go over the top. Ted Ginn's back so they can stretch the field a little bit. The one play they stretched the defense was the gimmick play when Taysom Hill came in and he actually threw the touchdown pass to Kamara, but it was called back. But clearly they made Kamara the focal point of that in the second half. And, you know, from a total yards from scrimmage, Kamara's going to rack it up. But, you know, yeah, can he run the ball? Sure. Ingram just wasn't getting a lot done between the tackles, and with Donald in there, maybe tough to run between the tackles. But the one thing that the Saints can do is they're like controlled running plays. They're just little swing passes to Kamara. So, yeah, I see both teams moving the ball between the 20s, much like was the case last week. But when you get into the red zone, and I think you're onto something too, just by the nature and the sheer import of the game, teams tend to get a tad more conservative when you're in the red zone and, you know, protect the football, don't take a sack, or take a sack to not mess up the field goal. So, I mean, it sounds like we're on the same page. To me, a lot of things kind of point to the under.
I think so, too. And, of course, I would certainly expect Sean McVay to try and take advantage of the fact that Sheldon Rankins is out for the Saints, which is a big loss there on the interior of that defensive line, especially against this Anderson and Gurley rushing attack. So both of us on the same page with the under 57 here. I do think this is a total that probably does move down. What about the side? 3.5 seems like a tricky number here. I mean, Saints get the full 3 at home for home field advantage in the dome in the playoffs. I think the half point suggests that on a neutral field, they are a slightly better team. I guess it's a very, very tough line. So what do you think from a side standpoint?
And it's kind of the case I had going into the Rams-Cowboys game. I just like the under. And now the hook, obviously, very attractive for the Rams. I would just say this, much like people thought the Chargers were this complete team and a different team, it's like, well, wait a minute. Here's New England again off a bye. Right in their wheelhouse. They've been there 1,000 times. And is it going to shock anybody if the Patriots, you know, step up and have a big game? So that happened. The thing that would really concern me on the side perspective is New Orleans, it's like they got the break of a lifetime. And if you're going to win like March Madness, right, and every time the team that ends up cutting down the nets, they have a game, right, a game in that six-game run where they survive, and they got a break and they survive. And I think maybe the collective sigh of relief is there for New Orleans because Philly had them on the ropes. And I get this feeling that New Orleans dodged that bullet and may take advantage of it and kick the door down.
All right, so let's go to the AFC Championship game here, game 313-314, New England, Kansas City. Kansas City, 3-point favorite out there. We've got some 3-105s on Kansas City, though. So maybe New England, a little bit of a preferred side here. You have to think Arrowhead at home in the playoffs, the way the wind swirls and all that kind of thing, worth 3 points. So are these two teams equal on a neutral field to you, Brian?
Close. I mean, with the experience of Brady, and the reason I would say that right now, I think New England – to a degree, is a different team. Everybody was shooting holes at him, and there were chinks in the armor. The one thing that the Patriots did, and did in really impressive fashion, Adam, and probably didn't get any credit for it because everybody's still there, oh, Brady and the Patriots, Brady and Belichick, they ran the ball in the last month. I mean, they were just running downhill. Michelle healthy. You got a 1-2 punch they call it a three-headed punch with Burkhead now, but with Michelle, White, and Burkhead, they're running the football really effectively. And, you know, if you're going to try to take away Brady and they can run the football, New England's really dangerous. Now, listen, they've been a home juggernaut. Now they got to take it on the road. I will say this, you know, full disclosure, I'm a moron. I had the over in the Chiefs, and it seemed like it was well on its way, and it didn't get there. But the funny thing is, Adam, sometimes, you know, the things that are such common sense that you're like, you're kidding, what a moron, all week long. Never mentioned it once. 5 minutes after they kicked off the game, I'm sitting there watching the game going, you're an idiot. You said with Andy Reid and playoff shortcomings and all this other stuff. Wait a minute. It was Andy Reid off of bye week. Like, what's the one angle we've talked about, like, for the last decade is Andy Reid's record off a bye? So sometimes it's right there in front of you, and you don't have to overthink it.
Well, on the bright side for the props video, you did mention Damian Williams going over his rushing total, and he had a really big day there for the Chiefs in that win over the Colts. And, you know, that really helps the Chiefs. I mean, you know, maybe you want to get tested a little bit because you're shaking off some of that rust, but also you got to go through your offense. You got Mahomes to get those nerves out. You got the running game going, and Damian Williams was very good. Those are all things that you needed in that progression to leading up to facing the New England Patriots, because for Tom Brady here, this is his 13th AFC championship game, 8th in a row. When he took over as a starting quarterback for the Patriots, Patrick Mahomes was 6 years old. So, you know, you do have a big experience edge here on the New England side, to be sure. But, man, you know, I look at Tom Brady in this game, Brian, and maybe you watched the Patriots game a little bit closer than I did. I'm concerned about him because he didn't get tested throwing the football down the field much in that game. And probably going to have to do that a little bit more here in this game. And I'm a little bit concerned with how he fares doing that.
No, it's a fair point. But the one thing is, if you can mask it, it's because they're running the football effectively. To go back to the Damian Williams thing for just a second, you know, if you're in doubt, there are so many things that are going to be offered for the game. I will tell you with certainty, and we did that video last week, it was unequivocal to me. The bet of the weekend last week was Damian Williams. It was 48.5 yards rushing. It got bet up to 51.5. Well, now the cat's out of the bag, and he'll probably be, I'm guessing, in the high 70s, low 80s. But sometimes when you sit there and you break a game down, the best play may be a prop. You know, and you don't treat props like they're a gimmick. You may be able to find something inside your handicap for the game and go, well, the odds makers know what they're doing, and then it's a backdoor cover, it's a bad bounce, or it's a missed extra point. But your handicap of the game may focus around an individual. It's the bet to make. And there was not a doubt in my mind that the Colts defense was going to try to contain Mahomes, and there were two ways that Williams was going to get there. And that's one, if they got the lead, and then they just ground and pound at the end to run clock. Or in the beginning, they were going to play nickel and dime defenses to try to slow downhill, and you know, Williams was going to get his opportunities there. So knock on wood, that one worked. That being said, in this game, I think you got to look, okay, Belichick, what is Belichick going to do? Always tries to take something significant away. My best guess would be, at all costs, Tyreek Hill is not going to beat them deep. At least that is going to be what he's going to do. So what would that mean? It should mean that the middle of the field is open. I think Kelce could be one of the best plays of the weekend. Now, how inflated that prop number gets remains to be seen. These numbers are going to be coming out here, you know, in the next day or two. But I would really be looking very seriously at making an overplay on Kelce. I'm guessing they probably have him in the maybe high 50s, low 60s, you know, 60 yards receiving from Kelce. But that would be, to me, trying to envision what Belichick may do, the opportunity that exists within the game for Kansas City.
Yeah, and that is the question. I mean, you know, can you take Tyreek Hill away? I mean, do the Patriots have enough speed to take him away over the top? Can they sacrifice you know, a safety when you have to worry about Travis Kelce. It's a tough spot for Belichick to be in here. But, you know, obviously he's a guy who's been through this many, many times over. Certainly should have a good game plan here. The thing I'm really curious about is how the Chiefs set this game up defensively. Because for as porous as the Chiefs were defensively, and especially against the run, they tied for the NFL lead in sacks with 52 during the regular season. So do they go after Brady? Do they try to shut down Sony Michel because they're not worried about putting them deep? I think, like you said, there are so many variables in this game that I think you do have to look at the prop market, maybe the derivative market. I think the first quarter over is a good play with the two scripted drives that these teams are going to have. But I don't see a whole lot of value on side or total here, Brian.
No, I would lean to the over. I think both of these offenses are prolific. I'm more inclined to believe these two would put more points up than the other game. And the funny thing is, and I will say this, you know, sometimes midstream, if you watch the first half of that Chiefs game, the weather in the field was still an issue. Remember, there was snow and ice on the field in the first half, and every guy that got hit would literally carry a defender forward 4 or 5 yards because everybody was slip sliding away. All of a sudden, the field became green, and the weather subsided, and all of a sudden, the tackling improved in the game. So, you know, that's another thing you got to consider.
All right, speaking of considerations here, let's transition over to the NHL side for a few minutes. We've got about 3 months, I would say, until the playoffs come back around. So had a listener request here about some Stanley Cup futures for the NHL market. We talked college basketball futures yesterday. I talked college basketball futures in a video over on our YouTube page. Now we'll do a little bit here with the NHL. And, Brian, you know, the All-Star break's coming up, so it'd be a pretty good time for teams to take stock of what they have, what they need by the trade deadline. Tampa Bay, still the Stanley Cup favorite, not a surprise. Toronto, the second favorite. As long as they're healthy, they should be there. Then you've got Vegas, Calgary, Nashville sort of in the next group. Any futures prices out there that you've got your eye on?
Generally speaking, Adam, I wouldn't go near a future. I want no part of it until the trade deadline. You know, I want to know what I'm actually dealing with here, because some teams are going to make moves. To me, the hardest series to win is the first round. Everybody's fresh. And then once teams win that first round, all of a sudden there's a sense of belief, and everybody gets a kind of a bounce in their step, and then some of these teams can indeed go on a run. So from a futures perspective, nothing that really is lighting my candle. I would say to you, though, you're always trying to look ahead. And this is almost like a baseball season this year. I've never seen anything like it where there's streaks that are just, you know, out of control. But you want to try to get ahead of something like that. I would say about 2.5-3 weeks ago, I'm sitting there and I'm telling you, I said, this is going to sound insane. And believe me, I had guys coming back at me like I was nuts. I said, St. Louis is not out of it. And they're like, they're horrible. I said, yeah, they're playing horrible. But they were showing some signs. But you looked at the standings. I mean, they had 4 games in hand on virtually everybody. Well, lo and behold, now the Blues have won 3 in a row, and they're sitting there now, and they're like only 2 points out of the last wild card spot. So, you know, it's about getting on board a streak on the front end, much as the case with baseball, and be it a winning streak or a losing streak.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, market entry from a futures standpoint is something that's pretty hard to pinpoint, because you are trying to, as you said, get out in front of those teams that get hot. You know, I mentioned some teams in the video yesterday where a team like Louisville, I think, has some futures value because they're going to be favored by a decent amount in their next 6 games. And the optics of being 11-5 versus 17-5, pretty different. So if they rattle off all 6 that they're supposed to win, their futures price is going to come down. It'll be the same thing in the
right,
NHL.
Louisville, those are the guys that are going to be playing all the way. In hockey, you know, there are going to be six teams that are going to make a trade that get some guy in there that's going to make the team significantly better. That's the difference.
Right. No, I understand that. I'm just saying, you know, the point that you made about market entry and getting out in front of, you know, when a team's going to go on a streak or when a team's going to, you know, do something impressive, or improve its playoff prospects or whatever else, you know, that is the time that you want to try to strike. And that's why, as you said, it is very tough at this time in the NHL because teams are going to be making those moves. They are going to be adding pieces and, you know, trying to figure out what they need. And also some teams that may be on the fringes of the playoff chase, maybe they need to start selling off some guys because of cap concerns or, you know, RFAs or UFAs, something like that. So right now, I think it is a very tough time to get into the NHL market. But I guess while we're talking about it here, all of a sudden, Vegas, they're the third favorite for the Stanley Cup at Five Dimes. They're the fifth favorite over at Bet Online. I mean, all of a sudden, man, this is a team that's playing some pretty good hockey.
Yeah, they're winning games. And they're a good team because they're winning. They're not dominating teams or tilting the ice on teams the way they did last year. But they're finding ways to win games, which in a weird way could bode very well for the playoffs. But you know what? I would throw this out, and I'd let the listener decide. Generally speaking, I very much, I don't care where you finish, you know, just be one of the top eight. You know, if you're in it, you've got a chance, and an eight can beat a one. That being said, I'm pretty convinced the winner of the Pacific Division will represent the Western Conference in the final. And you got Calgary at first, San Jose three back, Vegas four back. But here's the deal. The winner of the Pacific Division, and the reason I say this, the winner of the Pacific Division, all right, likely plays someone like Dallas or Minnesota, maybe a St. Louis. You know, I don't know that Anaheim can right the ship. They've got the goalie. But the winner of the Pacific is going to get one of those wild card teams. You don't want to be San Jose Calgary in the first round or Vegas San Jose or Vegas Calgary. That first round matchup, somebody will survive, but they're going to get killed. And then in the second round, if the Pacific Division winner beats the wild card team, they could conceivably in the second round get a beat up team. And then if you win the next round, the odds are very high, and this is what happened for Vegas last year, that you're going to get the winner of the Winnipeg-Nashville series after they beat the living hell out of one another. So positionally, I think Tampa's just the nuts, right? But I think the Pacific Division winner is the team that's sitting in the catbird seat with the most favorable road to get through. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because I think that Winnipeg-Nashville series will be a war between those two teams. Winnipeg is big and physical. Nashville's big and physical. Probably goes seven games. So I completely agree with you there. And, you know, that's one of those things you want to pay attention to, this unique playoff format that the NHL has where you play, you know, interdivision series in the first and second round, or you get that wild card that's cross-division that's, you know, maybe not a great team. So, yeah, that's definitely – that makes a lot of sense there. I certainly agree. And you can even kind of look at it with the Metropolitan Division too, where, you know, you don't have to play that Tampa Bay versus Toronto series in the second round that we know that we're very likely to get. You know, maybe the Metropolitan, while everyone's kind of balanced, you know, maybe that's a little bit different of a series there in the second round than Tampa Bay and Toronto. So that's another consideration as well.
Yeah, I mean, from the futures thing, just mathematically, you could dive in and do it. So I would say, you know, whoever you think's going to win the Pacific, you could take a flyer on. The problem is, if Tampa Bay makes the finals, you got no real hedge opportunity. But you know, then if you're going to take somebody in the East on the premise that, you know, maybe again, you know, getting out of the Atlantic could be the hard thing for Tampa Bay. You know, if they were going to, you know, play Toronto or Boston in the second round and maybe Tampa stubbed their toe there, you know, someone like, you know, the Islanders, you know, maybe could make some noise. They'd be the value play. And value means nothing to me. Where's the value in ripping up a losing ticket? But the problem is Tampa Bay looks really stout to get through from the East. So it limits your hedge opportunities. That's for sure.
All right, so let's move over to the golf side of things here. We'll talk about the Desert Classic for a few minutes because this is a very complex golf handicap this weekend in the sense that over the first 3 days, everybody's playing on a different course. You've got the PGA West Stadium course, the tournament course, and then La Quinta Country Club. So that definitely throws a wrinkle into this handicap, Brian.
Yeah, and I will tell you this, but this is not one of my favorite events. It's, you know, usually, right, it's like 2,700 bar. It's and you're all these different courses, and you're throwing darts a little bit. Doesn't mean you don't take a flyer here and there. I squandered a big opportunity. It started out great, had Shoffley, but what irks me is among the golfers I bet at Kapalua, Kuchar was one of them, and did not come back with him in week two. So I'm kind of mad at myself. I will say, though, to a degree, some of the guys, just like Kapalua, where you're looking at Kuchar and Putnam, guys that had played the week before, were prominent on the leaderboard. There was something to be said for having a tournament under your belt. I would say the same premise would hold true here, coming back onto the mainland. I had Sung J.M. last week. He's 50-1. Had a subpar first round, but was really good the next three rounds. I would take a look at a guy like that. I know you'd mentioned Pat Perez. He's back on the mainland. I kind of leaning towards Perez, more towards some of the events that are coming up. But Perez is always a guy, at least, you would throw some consideration at. Adam, and then there's guys, horses for the course. Defending champ, 7-1. There's no value in playing him. Justin Rose makes his debut this week. I would say, Chez Reavy played pretty good last week. He just he always comes up short. So he'll scare you for 3.5 days. Then you don't have to worry about it. But I would look at guys that played last week having an edge.
Well, something that I was thinking about, and I wrote about this a little bit in my preview, some guys that you and I talked about a lot at the tail end of last year, Bo Hostler, Joaquin Niemann, these are guys who all of a sudden are getting 60-1 price tags. They were, 25, 28, 30, 35-1 at the tail end of last year. We just haven't seen them in a while. They haven't played since the Asian swing. So, those are guys that may be getting a little bit of an overlaid price, although there could be some rust involved.
No, there's no doubt about it. I'd be looking at Hostler. Maybe you're right, though, out of the gate, that's where the price is going to be for you. I think Hostler's a guy you look when there's a boatload of tournaments in Texas. I'd be looking at him there. And once we get to see his current form, I'd be looking at him. I think you're right. I think this kid will get a W this year. Niemann was a guy that was one to consider. He was kind of a shiny new toy. Another guy, Aaron Wise, right, had the great year last year, 25-1. Again, like I said, Adam Hadwin shot a 59 on this course. Or at the TPC course at least. So he's 25-1. That's a tad low for me with Adam Hadwin, but he's got a positive vibe there. This is not one of my favorite events. I would tell you that you got the Abu Dhabi tournament, which I'd be taking a look at. And I think there are some price plays that are there. And this event will be on the Golf Channel. And it's a loaded field over there. Dustin Johnson's actually playing there. He's 5.5-1. Kepka's playing. Fleetwood's won on the course several times. But I'd be looking at some price plays. I think Carabel at 25-1. I think this guy has really taken his game to the next level. Current form, Matt Wallace had 3 wins last year. He's 30-1. I'd be taking a peek at a guy like him. And Oppy Bonrot's at 50-1. The one that the sneaky play, now the travel could be an issue, but the sneaky play could be here, Ian Poulter at 60-1. He played at Kapalua and then he played in Hawaii. So this guy, in terms of, and I don't know if you do things like this, but in his form cycle, this is 3 weeks in a row Poulter playing. And I think it's 60-1. A lot of these guys are coming off the shelf, and Poulter's been playing golf. 60-1 is a pretty juicy price for a guy that is clearly a different golfer again, and he didn't play great the last 2 weeks, but he's got a couple tournaments under his belt, and this could be the week.
Something I think I want to do with you next week, as I was listening to us talk about this, we obviously don't have any NFL games to talk about for next weekend. Because we'll have the week between the Super Bowl and the conference championships. We'll touch on the Super Bowl line, but I think, as we're kind of talking about golf here a little bit and maybe some different markets, how about we talk a little bit of Road to Kentucky Derby next week? What do you think about that?
Oh, you're you're speaking my language. No, I mean, and the beauty of that, first Saturday in May will be here soon enough, but it's a completely different animal. An American Pharaoh finally kicked that door down where an unraced two-year-old won, and in the last decade, the Kentucky Derby winner could be coming through Tampa Bay or Oaklawn or, they even had the one come out of New Mexico, right? So it's a different animal. And the Derby runner may not even have run a race yet. Derby futures, that's the beauty of that, man. If you can get a couple of the starting gate, believe me, that's an exciting 2 minutes for you if you got something at 100-1 breaking at the gate at 15-1.
Well, let's touch on that next week then, because like I said, no NFL next weekend and then the NHL and the All-Star break anyway. So we'll do that. We'll do a little bit of something different here on Bang the Book Radio. But Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, how can people check out those two shows, Brian?
Adam, kshp.com. Shows are archived at sportsbookradio.com. We always have great guests, terrific handicappers, but really excited about the stable of sportsbook directors here in Vegas. Really sharp guys. Always a lot of fun. And tonight we'll be hosting a hockey watch party. If you're listening in Vegas, we'll be over at Sunset Station for the Golden Knights-Jets game. Come on out, watch the game with us. And on Twitter at Brian Blessing. And we got a busy week this week, Adam. We've got a AFC and NFC championship game video at Bang the Book. We actually, the look-ahead Super Bowl lines are already out. So we did a little video on that. And then once the prop numbers come up for the two games, we'll get you a props video. We actually did pretty well on that props video we did last week. And see if we can't get a few of them today. But once we get the numbers, I mean this with all sincerity, trying to make a case for the side in the football. Well, wait a minute. I mean, again, it's a funny-shaped object. But over the course of 60 minutes of football, if you're projecting as part of your handicap, you know, how the game's going to be played out, it's revolving around a guy, why wouldn't you just play the guy?
Well, there you go. Definitely something to keep in mind. And again, you can find those videos over on our Bang the Book YouTube page and check out Brian's work on Twitter at Brian Blessing. Brian, appreciate the time as always, sir. Thank you so much, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, Adam. Love doing it with you, buddy. Have a good day.